We are facing a big global challenge these days. The climate change have shown us the icebergs melting, the polar bears suffering, the fishing are eating microplastics. All these issues is telling us that we got to start to think holistically, no longer to say this is animal issue, this is a nature issue, this is a human issue.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. Welcome to Species Unite, the podcast where we talk to people who are fighting one of the hardest fights on Earth to stop the unnecessary suffering of animals. Today's conversation is with Pei Su. Pei is the executive director and co-founder of ACT Asia, an organization that's dedicated to humane education in China. And Pei is seriously a pioneer. She was part of Taiwan's first animal rights organization ever. It started in the early 90s, and it still exists today. Since then, she's been what she calls putting out fires in the animal rights world for decades, until 2011, when she decided that the only way to create real change for animals in China was through education and through the children.
I grew up in Taiwan. When I grew up, I never had pets. I remember when I was probably about 3 or 4, we used to have a kitten. And I remember the kitten was always under our bed. I never really pay attention to kitten. And I just know they're such a nuisance because they pee and poo-poo down under the bed. And it was really smelly. When I was 17, my mother passed away and I was very sad. So one of my sister's friend recommend us to have a dog. And we were so totally unsuitable to have that dog because my brother, my three sisters, they're all working and study at night. And I studied a day and I had a nighttime job in the evening. So we hardly see the dog and the dog would be in a cage all day at our flats. And nobody in the whole, like probably less than 6 months of period we had that dog. Nobody ever told us the dog need to walk. We never walked a dog. Nobody told us we need to groom this dog or it's a puppy to engage him. Again, it was a nuisance because he was very chewy because, again, it was normal for a dog. He was, you know, he did his business at home. So we were told if the dog do the wee at home, you need to beat him up, kind of smack him. So he said, this is really bad. You're a bad dog. You do it. So actually, when I look back, I was like, oh, we are actually animal abuser ourselves. We mistreated these animals, you know. And I really found that instance when I look back now and I realized, you know, that the relationship between us, you know, in Asia, the relationship with animals is so different than the people over here. People have a really positive relationship. Not everyone is responsible for taking a good responsibility for their animals. But in comparison, I think our understanding of animal care or animals' needs are so limited.
Did you know other people that had animals that treated them differently?
I think when I was about, like I say, was 17, one of my best friends, she's the one probably really had positive own, you know, relationship with the dog. And she really loved her dog. We always think it's almost think like, why she treated so dog so seriously? Like that was not normal. But actually, if you see her way to treat animal, she's the right one, you know. And that is even more unusual in China. If you look at the modern history, you know, up to 70s before they were opened up to the world for capitalist economy, it's up to that time. Pet keeping was still kept as very bourgeoisie type of behavior, very corrupt, you know, almost like you you are keeping the Chinese old saying is 玩物丧志. That means you keeping the object and you lost your determination or momentum in some way. So basically you're wasting your life if you like animals.
Like you're a dilettante if you have a pet kind of thing.
Yes.
Wow.
We see animals very different. You know, that why I keep saying, but you know, 动物, the name of animals is moving objects.
That's the translation.
But in very general term, we almost need to relearn our relationship with animals.
So how did you go from not really even liking or not even
thinking
kind
about
of,
them.
Yes, to truly running one of the most incredibly impactful organizations in China when it comes to animals and education?
Kind of the trigger for me is justice. I think it's the social justice. That is kind of, for me, in my personal journey, that is my entry point. And I think also the second reason for me is my Buddhism practice or belief in the Buddhism we teach about all living creatures are equal. I almost feel is this is part of my practice to through my belief in a sense.
I also read that your early advocacy work was for women.
Yes.
That was the same thing, social justice?
Yes, yes.
And so what actually happened, though, that you made this transition? Was there a moment or did something, like how did it shift?
When I still have a commercial paid jobs, my spare time, I would do lots of volunteering work. I was very concerned about the human issues, particularly like young offenders, you know, the counseling, also the welfare of prisoners, domestic women, their rights. So I think at that time, I quite devoted to these social causes already. Then there was one instance about there was a big animal abuse case back in 1991. That was my first animal campaign. At that time in Taiwan, there was a many indoor fishing shops. So
what do you mean, like fish farms?
It's quite unusual. It's almost like fish farm, but it's actually a pool. So you got a pool and people will throw the fish in. So you buy fish and you not go there fishing. You keep hooking. So you will go hook the fish without any bait. Instead of hooking just the mouth, they hook anywhere they can hook. It's extremely cruel. So the fish will be hooked. And then you kind of use hook to pull them up. And if you get them, you grill them and you eat them. And people, again, was don't think there's anything wrong to do that to the live fish. So you might not hooking up that fish, but that fish can be injured. They can bleed. The people run the business, they don't want the fish to die. So they throw lots of, you know, antibiotics in, the bleach in. So just make sure the fish don't die. So again, it's extremely cruel. But the reading at that time was a big campaign for me to join. And then from that campaign, I realized it is these living creatures are so ignored, neglected, or mistreated in our society. And I suddenly thought, oh my goodness, they are, you know, non-profit organization for women, for kids, you know, for mental health issues, for prisoners, for all kind of human issues. But there's no groups really advocates for welfare for animal, how to care about this animal, or how to be kind to this animal. So I think that was quite a big enlightenment in sense. Then the group of us decide to say, hey, let's get to do an organization. And when they decide to organization, they say, would you like to be a full-time staff? I say, oh, yes, why not? To do it. So that's how I started.
And what was the organization?
It was the first animal rights groups in Taiwan.
Yes. Wow, you really are a pioneer. I mean, you've been in it since day one.
Yes. And that was back to 1992.
Does it still exist?
Yes. I'm their board member now.
That is incredible. And now in Taiwan, are there a lot of organizations?
Yes, there's a lot of organizations.
Taiwan's really doing great work.
I think, yes. Yeah. And there's law is super animal, you know, protection law. And I was the first one to work with lawyers and vets to draft that legislation as well.
So you decided now you needed something more difficult and you moved to China?
No, I think, you know, to be honest, so I work in Taiwan for 5 years full-time for animal issues. I was totally burnt out. And I kind of was crying all the time. I was very depressed, but I didn't know I was depressed. I just feel I'm not right. And I want to go to see what they're doing out there. Why ASPCA? Why PETA? Why you have International Society of Animal Rights? I think I came to United States first time is 1994, and to learn the animal rights issue. And I was so amazed. I was so inspired. So I came to United States for 3 months. I work as an intern for Fang Century. I was intern for an American Anti-VV Section Society in Philadelphia. I was with American Human Association in Denver, with ASPCA, with HSUS, and then I moved to Europe. So I spent another 9 months in Europe to stay with different organizations. I learned so much from a year of experience, and I truly, truly see the difference in culture, the different way of our life to interact with animals. I was inspired. So I bounced back.
Yes.
The other way. And then I went to work. So I went back to study as well. I went to study sociology because for my master, and that was my true passion in a sense, is looking at animal rights issue, looking at animal issue through sociological point of view. So when I talk about animal issue now, I always talk about what does that mean in our society? What does that mean to that group of people live in that part of the world? I was very lucky to work with an international organization in London for 5 years. After that, I was a bit disillusional in a sense. Because
about what?
I think I was disillusioned about our movement. In the West, we want to help the developing country to improve their way to treat animals. I was disillusioned in a way, is, are we doing the right thing? Are we doing the best way or most effective way to do this work?
Since you've seen and you've worked in so many different organizations, do you think there's an idea of how the West feels they could be helping versus how they could be helping? Do you know what I mean? Do you?
Yes. Yes, I think I'm very lucky. I came from a good grassroots background. I see how they struggle, how I have struggled. I had the privilege to work for the international organization, which have lots of branches and sub-organizations in different countries or under the one heading. And I saw what is the more kind of systematic way and organic way both to do the work. However, although we are working towards the same goal, but I do feel there's a huge gap about what we think they should do and what they think they want to do.
Wait, so a gap between what the West thinks Asia needs versus what Asia
think they need.
Yes. And can you explain that a little?
I found that lots of time, you know, when I work for international organization, we will go to a country, say, you know, we understand you have this problem. For example, we say you got a huge dog, you know, overpopulation issue. So your dog is on the streets or your dogs are sent to the shelters straight away. So the dog population is, you know, too many. So the Western organization might think, you know, you need to train your shelter worker, you need to build a proper shelter, you need to have a proper legislation, etc. Yeah, that's all very rational, logical to do it. the animal groups might recognize it, but they have a burning issues. They're burning issues. They don't have the money. They don't understand what do you mean co-project management. They don't understand what do you mean we need to have law. We know we need a law, but we can't lobby. So there's a gap, really quite difference in a sense. What I'm trying to say, what we think they should tackle or they should resolve, it doesn't mean they can or they want to address that. So there is a huge yawning gulf in a sense about whose priority should come first. I go back to where I started at the beginning is my childhood experience. When I grew up, nobody was guiding us about, you know, how these are the living creature. They have feelings, to be kind to them. And then when I have my own child, I realized, oh my goodness, that this child is like a blank canvas. We are their role model. Actually, kids love animals. They're curious about the creatures, but they might just do whatever they like. I watched videos, you know, on China all the time. And one of the videos I saw was this girl was about not even 3. And the whole filming was how she tortured that rabbit. Throw the rabbits on the floor, or she and then pick up again, and she would screech the rabbit, and then pull the rabbit's, you know, the ears or tail. Her granddad was filming her, and it was kind of like, oh my goodness, if this has happened, we should say, hey, this is not right. You know, this rabbit can feel scared. You're hurting the rabbit, but the kids was almost not being told. Oh no, you love this, you know, bunny. Can you try to be nice to the bunny? You know, this, you're going to scare them. So the child, the way that girl was treating the animals was like, I have no feeling. It's just like no different.
Right.
I was so surprised myself. I said, oh, we got to do something. I want to teach these children to understand, be kind. And they are kind. Their kindness was taken away by teaching them, you know, not the correct information or not have a proper channel or opportunity to provide them the way to learn, to keep their empathy, to maintain their empathy.
Well, and you've already taught a lot of children.
Yes.
How many?
Up to the beginning of 2019, we have reached over 78,000 children in China since 2012. We have trained more than 2,000 educators. So when people say, why are you focus on the children? And I always say, well, focus on the children seems to be really simple, but actually by allow us to teach children, we have to convince the adults. We have to convince the teachers, the school principal, the authorities. We have to get them on board. Actually, in the whole process, we reach out to the key decision makers, and the teachers are going to be there for life in China. So if we get them to understand what we're teaching, These teachers will teach kids, you know, year after year.
That's one thing I think the West can really learn from you, because there's certainly not enough of that in our education at all.
Act Asia is groundbreaking in the sense is we don't just go to school teaching by ourselves. We don't have resources for that. When I set up organization, you know, set up the program, I actually was want to avoid the pitfalls or the things we are not doing as well in the other part of the world. So I was deeply designed a program is trying to train the educators within the institution. And I want that change to be happening within inside of institutions.
How does it work when you approach a school or the authorities or whoever you start with? I mean, is there a lot of resistance? Do people think, hey, we already have too much to learn, or this is crazy?
Of course, there will be always resistance, but I think it's very important to understand how the education system works. We need to prepare the right sort of material for the school. We cannot just say, hey, this is a lesson plan. Do you want to do it? You know, teaching is more than just lesson plan. We prepare the curriculum guideline. We prepare our lesson plan. We prepare the teacher's training manual, kids, their learning sheets, their learning books. So we provide the whole set. And we go to school. And also, we don't just want to say that the course is only for animals issue. You know, the purpose of education is to be able to live in together in harmony. The kids should be able to learn each, to be able to sense the world, know the world, and participate in the world. I think nowadays we get so overburdened by all these academic abilities or intelligence in IQ rather than the emotional intelligence. And I think when we go to school, we're talking about much bigger. We talk about the social justice, we talk about the animal welfare, you know, the global citizenship, critical thinking, all these skills. And I think if you are going to broaden sense of much wider context, and I think they are more willing to accept it.
How old are the kids when they start typically?
6.
And they go until?
They can go up to 12.
So 6 years.
Yes. If we get these people with empathy and compassion, know the way to treat animal, our effectiveness is phenomenal.
And what has the response been like by the teachers and by the students?
When I started a program, I always think, oh, we're not going to get to, you know, a couple of schools and maybe 10 schools will be lucky. But today we have reached more than 140 schools. At the moment we're in China, we have a 10 pilot school. They are teaching year after year.
And what do you hear back from teachers about how students respond?
We had a rigorous scientific evaluation as well. We work with City University of New York, Dr. William Samuel. He has been working with me for the last 6 years. We did an evaluation together because evaluation is something our sector don't tend to do well. We now have a 3-year solid data which was presented. Kids was become less disruptive, become more social. They become kinder to each other. We also evaluated kids, their perception towards animals, perception or their understanding towards the nature environment. For example, energy, pollution, water. So we are, the caring for life education is not talking only about animal welfare. It's talking about environmental protection, climate change. So the course itself is actually emphasizing repeatedly about the interconnectivity between human, animals, and nature. And we are facing a big global challenge these days. The climate change have shown us that the icebergs melting, the polar bears suffering, the fishing are eating microplastics. It's, all these issues is telling us that we got to start to think holistically.
Absolutely.
We can no longer to say, this is animal issue, this is a nature issue, this is a human issue. We are all
It's together. All connected.
Yes. Teaching kids how to be a good human being should be a curriculum subject. I believe human education or caring for life education should be academic subjects. Like we kids have to learn math, science, and English.
It absolutely should. Yes. I mean, here too, here and China, everywhere. So ACT Asia, so education is your number one pillar.
Yes.
And let's talk about FUR a little bit because you guys have done incredible work.
Yes.
And FUR in China, that's a big, you go after big mountains. You know, like you really are not only a pioneer, but you're just a brave soul.
Yes.
So can you give us a little background on, because China produces a lot of the world's FUR.
China is the biggest producer for FUR, biggest consumers today, biggest importer and exporter in terms of the FUR industry. And China is the biggest FUR farming country in the world as well. In 2014, China produced 60 million minks. It was 10 times or 20 times more than in Europe. I started FUR issues back in, again, was about 2011. When we set up ourselves as an education organization, we feel we teach kids, we targeted children as our audience. So I feel very strongly is the consumers have responsibility. I think today's world, especially in America, I think the consumerism is just so, so strong. You know, we forgot the huge consumption or consumer behavior is causing a great damage to our planet. So we feel it's very important to talk to consumers about responsible living, really. And that is lead to compassionate living, compassionate lifestyle. But what does that mean, compassionate living? And we give a lot of examples. You try to eat less meat, you know, plant-based food, don't wear fur. when I look at the fur industry, when I look at the fur issue so deeply, I feel this is the entry point for people to learn animal issues in sense of fur is a trend no longer is so popular in the west part of the world. For example, in Europe, there are lots of big brands, you know, like Hugo Boss, Armani, Gucci, Burberry, they all, these luxurious brands, they all saying they stop using fur, they're going fur free, using this as a momentum to promote in China, to join, to invite more Chinese fashion retailer to join the fur free retailer scheme. We promote to public to join fur free life, to make them think, you know, to be richer, to be more affluent in that part of the world. It doesn't need to be cruel.
And you just had two fashion shows.
I just had the one sustainable fashion, begin with fur free forum, and also a fashion show. So it's two events.
And what's the response to that like? Are people getting behind it?
This year we reached over 37 million viewers. Our event was reported by several fashion leading magazines, including Vogue, Gazelle, InStyle. There actually are more and more young, you know, generation of young consumers in China. They want to buy ethical products.
Yeah.
They want to be responsible to buy the products that cost less to our planet and not harm animals as well. And I think that's what is very positive. And I think we also encourage more Chinese company in the country. They are local brand, they are Chinese designer, they join part of this global movement as well. We have people from all over China to join our event. We have over 350 people to attend our fashion shows in Shanghai.
That's incredible. Well, I feel like to a lot of people, at least in the West, when they talk about China and animal rights, they're very overwhelmed by it. Like it's almost like, where does one begin? And you just began. But I mean, you have to begin somewhere. And it's not like anywhere else in the world, it's always been good. Everyone has grown and changed. What do you hear in that sense with other activists, animal rights in China? Is there an overwhelming sense at how many things aren't working?
Every country have their own backyard issues. In America, you still have really, you know, horrendous, you know, animal abuse case, mistreated case. You know, you still have circus in a sense.
I mean, and we also have horrific factory farms.
Exactly. Right. You are probably one of the biggest, you know, meat eater in the world as
well. Yeah, we are the biggest.
So, I mean, so what I'm saying is I don't feel there's any way American can feel more superior than Chinese.
No, and I don't think people are saying in a superiority way.
And so what I'm saying is we all recognize the problem. However, we do have a more limited resource. We don't have so many organizations as here. We're still working in a very, you know, challenging, you know, environment to overcome. And of course, it's very overwhelming. You know, even myself, sometimes when I read the news, when I read the you know, the social media posts, sometimes I have to say, you know, I'm going to turn off because it's so overwhelming for myself. Then you were saying, you know, where am I going to start? You got to start somewhere. And I have spent my first 20 years to do Ben 8 firefighting work. I decided 6 years ago, I want to start something for long-term change to reach that long-term goals by through education, using that positive message to create change within the institution. We are kind people. We're intelligent. We are passionate what we're doing. We should not be seen as extreme.
Right.
Everyone can do small things. And that's why when I named the organization was ACT. ACT will stand for A for action, C for compassion, and T for togetherness. Because I think if everybody be compassionate, do one step at a time, one thing small, together we are making that big change.
Are there ways that people in the West can help or get behind ACT?
Yes. One thing is we rely on public support. if anyone be interested, want to support our work, can go to our website. It's called www.artasia.org to support and donate. You can spread the news for us.
Thank you so much, Pei. This is fantastic.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm so privileged and so honored to be able to share this experience and our work with everyone.
To learn more about Pei Su and to learn about Act Asia and get behind their work, go to their website. It's actasia.org. We will also have links to Pei and her work on our website, speciesunite.com. We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. And if you'd like to support the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. There are two ways in which you can do so. Please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts because it helps other people find the show. And we're also on Patreon. It's patreon.com/speciesunite. Thank you. And I would like to thank everyone who made today's episode possible, including Gary Knudsen, Natalie Martin, Allison Berenger, and Anna Kallner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thanks again. Have a great day.